Welcome to the Cybersecurity Expert Podcast, where you learn from the best cybersecurity minds, helping MSPs become cybersecurity heroes for your small business clients. And now, here's your host, Cybersecurity Sherpa, Jennifer Bleem.
Well, thank you everyone for joining me today. I am here with Corey Kirkendall, and Corey is an awesome MSP who is extremely security focused. He is one of the few IT companies that I can count on one hand that has been at the forefront of the security journey and is very mature when it comes to securing his clients and investigating vendors. And so I asked him if he would be willing to come on the podcast today and talk about a little bit of a sticky subject. And so this one's going to be full of some bombshells and some awesome information. But let me just make sure that our audio is still working well. Corey, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. All right. So last week I was talking with one of my private clients and he was wrapping up the creation of his cybersecurity solution stack. And he's got about 15 or 20 different tools and different vendors that he has merged together. Those tools and services are going to now become his managed security offering that he is going to sell to his existing clients and his prospects. And he asked me this question. You know, now that he is starting to get the SLAs and the terms and conditions from all of these different vendors, he is struggling because there is some ambiguity in this, in these agreements or these terms that he's a little uncomfortable with. So he asked how to reconcile this in his mind. And I immediately thought of you because you're probably 2-3 years in front of where he is. So Let me hand this to you and just say, did you find some vagueness or some ambiguity when you started looking at the SLAs of the various vendors you do business with?
Yeah, you said you're gonna throw me a bomb, but hey, Jennifer, it's all good. I love it. So the short answer is yes, and it's been a challenge, and it continues to be a challenge for us. So I kind of give a little bit of kind of what we've done. So I have this super huge spreadsheet with a lot of columns and a lot of rows that literally list out every vendor we have from a security perspective, what they do, what they offer, and how we're leveraging it in our stack. We talk about things of, have we signed a contract? Do we have an MSA with them? What state do they practice law out of? Because we're in Texas, and if you're in Delaware or in California or something else, most of those contracts are written that even though we're in Texas, it follows the laws of the state that they're in, which we're not familiar with. So we have to become familiar with that. The first thing I do before I do anything is we have an attorney that looks at every contract that we go through. We just don't blindly sign. We've been in situations where we get a contract from a vendor and we push back and say, hey, and they just literally tell us that, hey, you're the first person to ever question that statement or question why it was written like that. Mm. And some of them are just totally random, looks like they were boilerplates and they make no sense, but it puts all the risk on us as the MSP and we go back and we do it. So the first thing is, no matter how great the tool is, if there's not a bend and able to make sure that we're protecting us as a company and we're able to make some changes and red lines, then what that's showing is that partnership kind of piece is that, hey, you're trying to put all the blame on me. We're trying to share the responsibility. And if you're not even willing to do it at that point, what happens when I'm in the thick of something? You kind of see where it's kind of going. So the first thing is everything has to be reviewed by a lawyer, period.
And are the vendors,
if the lawyer doesn't,
are they willing to edit their agreements?
In some cases, some of them are, because we actually find out what it is. And those who are not, or whatever, to write in some opportunities of what we want some changes done, we don't try to change anything. We're not trying to change all their terms. But when we look at it and see it is very heavily one-sided, that's a red flag that comes up to us. And we're trying to figure out how can we meet in the middle or meet somewhere to where we understand. And if we get past that piece and we can't do that, then we just got to figure out, do we have an opportunity by engaging this vendor and we have a problem? How much risk are we willing to accept based on that vendor product or something that's in our portfolio, right? And then I have to go do some soul searching and says, hey, again, cybersecurity is all about how much risk you're willing to accept. So I have to ask that question to myself. How much risk am I willing to accept by allowing this tool to be a part of my stack and can I live with that?
Now, I would imagine.
It's a hard question.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I want to park there in just a minute. But before I go there, to, you know, how do you sleep at night, and how do you decide how much risk you're willing to absorb? You mentioned specifically solutions. Now, what about on the service side? What about when you're buying a tool that has services along with it? Are you finding similar ambiguity inside of the MSA or the agreement?
Yeah, we are. So even though we have tools that have come with a service, whether it's a NOC, SOC, or some type of assistance where we have service attached to it, in most of the contracts, what we've seen is they kind of write it, says, hey, what I'm providing you, even though I'm providing you that service, I'm providing you a tool. And because it is a tool, you cannot say that my tool is ultimately responsible for X, even though maybe somebody in their service may have caused the issue. But because it's wrapped as a tool, they kind of are shielded from all the clauses that are in their contract. And so we try to unpack that to really drill down to understand what is the ultimate impact and what that looks like.
That's
and
just fascinating.
So it's pretty challenging.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, the typical sales process for an MSP, you're going to talk to a salesperson at the vendor, and the vendor via the salesperson is going to promise that their tool or their service does XYZ. You do comparisons and you maybe do a proof of concept or something, and you decide, okay, this is the service I want to adopt. And in the process, you want a copy of the paperwork that will show you what the salesperson promised, because salespeople aren't always honest. And then you get paperwork that's a bit vague. So how do you reconcile that? Because that does feel very risky to me.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, I protect my stack as best I can. I don't let anybody in it. And it's, you know, if you're in it, you're your own point. So what I try to do when I work with our partners and we go through it, what I do is, and it's kind of weird, and they always kind of get like, whoa, I walk to them and say, guys, I need to walk through kind of an incident response scenario, kind of a tabletop exercise with my vendor. And say, in this hypothetical scenario, hey, I'm walking through it, customer gets hit and something, and we actually able to label it down, and it is your tool. How would we handle that situation? Right? What are we going to do? What does that look like? Are you there to support me? What support do I have? What do I look like? Because what it done is, without saying it directly, it's unpacking what I need to happen when I'm in that situation, mm-hmm. right? And it's asking them to respond. If they don't have a response or don't know how to respond or saying, hey, kind of a tool, then it kind of lets me know what it is I'm going through, because I'm trying to put it in a real life scenario, because that's exactly what I'll be going through at that mm-hmm. point in time. It's what happens? Who do I call?
Do you mm-hmm. walk through this incident response or this quasi tabletop exercise with the vendor before you've committed to them, or is it kind of a last step? Like, guys, I'm planning to sign with you, but first I want to walk through this scenario.
Yeah, so it's all of the above. So first thing we do is when we decide to bring in the tool in, we want to bring the tool in, try to set it up, figure out how it works, and see if my guys, if I need a rocket science degree to get it up and running. Mm-hmm. After that, we'll come back and say, all right, we want to do a technical demo so that we can answer any of the questions that we have found while we're trying to deploy it based on our own, because we want to make sure we have a good understanding of it. And in that process, throughout the demo, we choose not to work with the sales guy. We want a technical resource, and we try to get as deep into the technical resource as we can so that we can ask questions of how this is doing it, what is it doing, how's it doing, how we're handling upgrades, how often do you change the code, how do you push out updates? Mm-hmm. Are you going to let me know good release notes on based on because you went from release one to release two so that I can verify? And what is the process of how that's changing in your testing? What does that look like? How much information do I get to be able to handle that? And we're walking through all this stuff. So it's a long process that we have to instill. And the way I treat it is that if I decided to invest and I brought this in-house, I have to try to treat that partner and that vendor just like it is my internal department. So I try to put those same requirements on them, and they got to really answer those questions. Now, I know I can't get them all answered, but they got to be something that I'm comfortable with and be able to live through, and they should be able to be open and share that with me.
So this is going to be more of a gut feel, but do you feel like that is the way that most IT companies are approaching security vendors? Is that the norm, or are you a bit of an outlier?
I would want to say it's the norm. I don't think that I'm anything special. I come from a military family background. All the time is very methodical, right? We follow checklists, and some of my friends, they hear me, they'll talk about it, that I have friends who are pilots who were in things. If you don't follow a checklist, people will die. So therefore, it becomes very, very critical to follow that and be very methodical in that situation. So last year, I had a chance to go out to RSA, right? And if anybody have been to RSA to look at the security vendors, the hall was so big, I never got out of the first two or three rows.
Yes.
It was crazy. I mean, it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. I said, I'll never go back because I couldn't handle it. It was overload.
Yeah.
And I never got out of the first two rows. It was thousands and thousands of security vendors, thousands. And so what typically happens, everybody has the next shiny ball. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know and do the research, I mean, you're just constantly swapping out balls all the time. And, you know, it's hard because everybody wants that silver bullet in this situation. And I don't believe there is one, but the due diligence takes time. And the hackers are not taking time, right? So you kind of try to do what you got to do, but you got to find that right balance by doing simple things with foundations, harden your infrastructure, making sure you got ports closed, not 3389 open, the crazy stuff that needs to be fixed, mm-hmm. while you're working on that solution to better what you have in place, right? That's the piece that you have to get done and kind of work through that process.
Okay, so you've hinted at this a few times. So you've got your solution stack, you're selling it, you've looked at the, you know, whether it's 15 or 25 different vendors, you've put them through the process, you've gotten the MSAs or the SLAs redlined, everyone's on the same page now, you've gone through the tabletop exercise, and now you're delivering the service. So you've absorbed that risk. You've decided how much risk you're willing to absorb. You've absorbed it. But how do you then reconcile that in your mind and be able to sleep at night? Have you invested in cyber liability insurance? How do you absorb that risk? Because it is a risk, since you're not actually the one delivering the service and the tool. So how do you sleep at night?
So once we went through that due diligence and got to that point to where we are confident, but we haven't spooked ourselves out, because, you know, it's very easy to scare yourself out to the point where you don't move and do anything. Once we get to that point, yes, we do. We have cybersecurity insurance with, you know, third-party liabilities, all that piece is built in to ensure what that looks like, and making sure that our cybersecurity insurance covers not only what we do, but also what our vendors that we recommend do as well. Making sure that that's covered. And we try to spend time to sit down and talk to them and say, hey, there's products that we have that are extensions of us, that what they do may cause an issue. Does that follow through us because we recommend it? Does that follow us? So we ask these very hard questions. And sometimes I start going, I don't know, right? But we want them to go mm-hmm. figure it out and try to help it. So we have a pretty good, always evolving cybersecurity insurance plan with our provider, and it's ever evolving.
I'm kind of chuckling on my end, because I'm thinking, well, if the questions are hard today when there's no crisis, then how hard are they going to be when you actually have a client that's breached or has a ransomware attack? The questions are going to get a lot harder then. So better to have those conversations now.
Agreed. And, you know, and that's the piece is we're constantly, you know, picking at it, tweaking at it, but we're constantly in communication with our attorneys, we're constantly in communication with our insurance firms, and we're in constant communication with our channel managers at these partners, and let them continue to understand and know our concerns of what's going on. And so we're trying to push the envelope as best we can. But once we satisfy on that stack, here's what it is. And what we do is we build a cadence on what's happening in that stack internal to our organization, of how we leverage it, deploy it to try to be consistent. And we still know that nothing's 100%, but we're a lot better than we were without doing anything and not having it. We don't believe that this can be like picking your RMM tool or picking your PSA. still got to go at them and make sure that they're putting their security protocols and things in place as well. So those are getting changed a lot, but it's a lot more stringent all across the board. And what we've done on our security stack has now flowed back into all of our tools, which does include our PSA, our RMM, our document management system, because all of that plays a role into the security piece. One of those weak links blows it up.
So do you mean you've gone back to those vendors and asked them for their terms and conditions and redlined it, walked them through a tabletop exercise, same exact process?
Yep, we're in the process of that now. We're actually in the process of possibly changing out a lot of those key components from the things that we found out from just working through that process to the point where we thought we were in a place to where we're getting ready to really change what we've stabilized on over the last 5 or 6 years because the people that were in our stack didn't meet these requirements. And it had nothing to do with the new security stuff. It's our old infrastructure, which is the PSAs, the document management, and the XYZs in there.
And it's interesting so, because that is reminiscent. Yeah, well, that's reminiscent of what we were just saying with insurance, right? Like these are some hard decisions you've had to make, but how much harder would it be in 6 months if that particular vendor has a breach that they didn't patch and criminals get in and whatever? And we've all heard the stories. And so by all means, if you found an issue, you owe it to yourself and your clients and your prospects to get ahead of that. And unfortunately, yes, that may mean some infrastructure changes. So good stuff.
Yeah. And it's uncomfortable, right? Because it's so uncomfortable for us because we live and die by our channel partners or our vendors. I don't believe if I find the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow to be able to have my own, write my own PSA, write my own RMM, write my own security tool, write my own antivirus, and write my own, it just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So it behooves us to have a good relationship. And it behooves us to make sure that we're doing our due diligence to make sure that first they're financially viable, that they're going to be around, right? So making sure that what they're going and looking at the development plans and how it goes through, mm-hmm. looking at making sure, you know, talking to other vendors. So before we sign up with anybody, the first thing I'm asking them is, hey, can I get a couple of more MSPs, guys who like you, didn't like you, that I can go talk to and see what did they do, what they liked, they didn't like, and what did they not learn? Mm-hmm. And I think that's been really valuable for us as well, because MSPs, we will tell you, hey, I didn't do this and do that. And they're going to tell you something that you probably didn't think about. And it's like, oh man, I never even thought about that. But great. Thank you for bringing it up. Now that's on my list. I get getting better. So what we're seeing is leveraging the community to talk across one of each other, because all of us has either touched, evaluated, had a call, used, got rid of anything that's in our community that we have available to us.
Yes.
It's not new. Right. So why don't we leverage that power to become better as a whole, as an industry? Because that's how it works.
That's interesting, because so many IT companies are very willing to talk about their experiences, both positive and negative, with vendors, but the question isn't asked often enough. So I love your methodical approach to selecting vendors and to vetting them and putting them through the paces so that you ultimately can deliver a solution to your end users with the least amount of risk possible. So
yeah.
I love it. Any last parting thoughts you can think of, things that we could have talked about? I'm sure there's plenty that we could have talked about, but specific to this, the liability issue and trying to limit your risk as an MSP.
Yeah, I mean, so the main thing is you know, have a good documentation of a spreadsheet or something that shows all your vendors, all the terms, all the contract, what they're doing, and revisit it regularly. Because they're constantly changing. And then just like our master service agreement, right? Think about what we do. We sign an MSA, right? And we're always told don't change the MSA, but we can change everything else around the MSA, right? We can, you know, add some addendums or some things here and there. But guess what? They can do the exact same thing. So we have an agreement, what we signed 2 years ago, but a lot of things have changed in those 2 years. Have we ever went back to figure out how does that affect me, right? How does that change the scope of what I've done? Most cases, we've never done that. So now we're actively having to make sure that we're constantly not only looking at our contract, but making sure that everything that we thought we put in place a year ago is still in effect. right? How many of our vendors we see now getting bought up by private equity firms? How has that changed the relationship and the contract going forward? We see it happening. Have you questioned it and asked what the impact is?
Right.
Right. How many of, you know, we see acquisitions happening. We see people, we see it consolidating. So now that it's been acquired, do we follow the original company's master service agreement, or is there a new one?
Right.
And you have to ask that we just happen to be grandfathered into, right? We don't know.
Right.
So you can't make an assumption. So you got to go and really spend time with them and really ask the hard question and be willing to walk away.
Mm-hmm. As in any negotiation, right? You have to be willing to walk away.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Great stuff, Corey. So much appreciate your time. I know you have had a very, very busy couple of weeks with some prospects. And man, that would probably be another great conversation to have. Prospects that said, hey, you were too expensive. And then they walked away and then they got hit with a cyber incident. And then they came back to you because they knew you were the expert, which is exactly the goal. So I am so glad you were able to make time for this. This is definitely going up on my high list of favorite interviews I have ever done. Really appreciate your time. And I'll let you get back to your busy world for sure. But thanks for being with us today. I do appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Jennifer. As always, you know, I got nothing but love for you, and I always love spending time with you. So anytime, you know, my phone and my door is always open to you.
You rock. You. I appreciate it.
To learn more about how you can become a cybersecurity hero for your clients, request your hero assessment today. MSPSalesRevolution.com/hero.